Hello and welcome to episode 112 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grundislav, and with me, as always...
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, also known as Ben304. How are you, Francisco?
I'm doing well. You sound very, very smooth and silky and sleepy. Are you sleepy?
Thank you. That's a lot of... No, I'm not.
It's a lot of alliteration. I know.
It is, yeah.
But yeah, I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm also doing all right.
Good.
I don't really have much to add to that, but I'm glad to be here. And...
Good. You're playing Split Second?
I am playing Split Second. I've actually finished the game, but it's a nice, relaxing game, and there's some races that I've got, you know, additional achievement I can earn, so I'm just, you know, taking on a few little events, and I've already won a gold medal where previously I had come second, so that's nice.
Oh, that's nice. I bought a new game last week, and I have not taken it out of its shrink wrap yet again. I got Uncharted: The Lost Legacy.
Oh, that's right. You did tell me that.
Yeah.
But... I bought a new game today.
Oh,
did I tell you that?
No, you didn't.
Hmm. Very good.
What did you
buy? I bought a new... It's kind of an adventure game. It's called Tiny Echo, and it's very interesting art style.
Interesting.
So, I played a little bit of it tonight after finished work and finished dinner and finished walking the dog.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was... I mostly bought it because the art and animation look great.
Okay.
But oh, I'm curious to see how it turns out.
I know we don't really do the what have you been playing thing anymore, but I wanted to recommend an adventure game that I played last weekend.
Do it.
It's called...
I'm going to recommend one that I played last weekend too.
Okay, good. I played one called The Low Road, and I've mentioned it before, I think, on this podcast, because...
Yes, you have.
Yeah, it's being...
That was a long time ago, though.
Yeah, but it was released about a month or so ago, and I saw it at Play NYC, which was this games convention that they had here in New York a couple of weeks ago. And they were very kindly gave me a Steam code for it.
That's awesome.
But still, like, you
should... It looks really nice.
Yeah, it looks really nice. And I actually saw that they released a patch for it yesterday, which... hopefully fixed a few things, because it was playable. There weren't any game-breaking bugs, but there was a couple of instances where I found that if I used inventory items, because the way that the inventory works is you have to drag the items out from your inventory and then release on the hotspots you want to use them on. I found that if I did that a little bit too much, the character would stop responding to clicking on where I wanted to walk, which...
Right.
It was kind of a problem because there's a lot of big scrolling rooms. So the solution was to save the game, quit out of the game, and then... Or actually, you didn't even have to quit out. You just had to load your save game, and it would fix it. So that was fine. But but yeah, overall, the game was really nice. It was quirky. It was charming. It wasn't too long either. I think I finished it in about 5 or 6 hours.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's 6 chapters. Each one takes about maybe an hour to play. And... Yeah, it was interesting. It was set in an interesting world of corporate espionage in the 70s. And yeah, it was interesting. The characters were fun. The puzzles were pretty fun. There wasn't anything that was like super challenging or anything, but there were a few mini game type things that weren't really mini games. Like the very first puzzle is a dialogue puzzle where you have to use a dossier. This was actually in the demo that I played a long time ago. You have to use a dossier to convince a person on the phone that you're someone from her past. So you have to look.
That's cool.
Yeah, you have to look through like her private files and stuff, and determine what approach to best use. And yeah, there's like a little pickpocketing mini game thing that's pretty fun that you have to do a couple of times, and. Yeah, overall it's a really cool game, and the art style is nice, like you said, and I highly recommend it. And they patched it, so, yeah, one of the characters, the only issue that I had, really, that a lot of people pointed out was that one of the major characters, the recording quality was completely different to the rest of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
His voice sounded like tinny, like they had put too many audio filters on it. And apparently they addressed that in the new patch, so I haven't checked it out, but hopefully that they only made the game better. So,
good.
Yeah, check it out. The Low Road. But you don't have to take my word for it. Ba-da-bum. I keep making that reference and you don't get it, but I don't care. Someone will.
Okay. Good. Sometimes you make references, like you made a reference earlier today to a song from the 1980s that I just completely ignored. And when I say early today, I mean yesterday for you. And I just went, I don't want to do 80s music with you today.
Okay.
But
I can respect that.
That reference I did. Hmm?
I said I can respect that. I don't expect you to be on and doing 80s music with me all the time. It's fine.
But last weekend I got the second Bertram Fiddle game.
Oh, this one
is called A Bleaker Predicament.
Yes.
And I didn't quite finish it that weekend. I planned to, but then I got doing quite an intense study for art study. So I didn't, that sort of ate up the rest of my weekend time and I haven't had a chance to play games since. Mm. So it's on my, I'm very close to the end, but if you played the first Bertram Fiddle game, it was a pretty short, pretty, self-contained little thing, but it definitely left you wanting a meatier adventure, and this has definitely got more to it.
Okay.
And, it keeps pretty much everything the original had, but just there's more of it now. So that's cool.
Yeah.
And I really like Bertram Fiddle's art style. It's got a very unique art style.
Mm-hmm.
The jokes are very silly. Like, incredibly silly.
Yeah,
sometimes we like silly things.
Sure.
And in this case, I definitely do.
Good. Well then, let's move on to our topic.
Hey, we've both been playing adventure games. That's cool.
I know. What a strange set of circumstances.
Yeah, it's almost like we like the genre.
I know. Who would have thought? Okay, so we have a topic.
So we have another topic request.
Yes, once again, submitted by our dear friend and loyal listener, Snarky.
Are you going to do a dramatic reading of it once again?
Of course.
Excellent.
This one isn't quite as long, but I'll try my best. I also had another topic idea. When to give up. You've talked about the skills needed to finish a game. You've talked about cutting stuff that isn't working. And you've occasionally mentioned games you never finished. But how do you know when it's time to walk away from a project, either your own projects or collaborations? That is an excellent question, Snarky.
Mm, and a very difficult one to answer.
Yes. Those usually make for the best questions.
I guess. but they don't probably always make for the best podcast because we end on a sort of, I got no idea.
That's true.
Not that we ever have an idea.
Well, our podcast, see, we talk a lot of crap on this podcast, but my hope is that we're not here to answer your questions. We're here to give you things to think about.
A lot of the times these questions don't have answers.
Yeah.
Per se.
Exactly.
It's not just, you can't just say 10 and have answered the question correctly.
Yeah.
It's not math class.
We're just two guys who have some experience in making adventure games. And sometimes we talk about stuff we've encountered and our personal experiences, but you shouldn't take our particular answers as truth, especially considering we've said a lot of untrue stuff that we've later regretted. Well, not regretted, but yet we've learned better.
Yeah, that you realize that there's possibly more to the issue than our own personal sphere of experience could ever cover.
Exactly.
But, I think...
So with that lovely preface, let's dive in.
I think it's important before we get... And we got lag.
No. I just interrupted you. Go ahead.
Okay. I think it's important before we start to mention that sometimes giving up doesn't mean you quit a project. Sometimes you might have a personal goal for a project and you can realize that you're not going to achieve that particular goal, but the project's still worth finishing anyway.
Right.
And you can give up that particular avenue that you're pursuing, whether it's an art goal, whether it's a design goal, whether it's a coding goal, whether it's a writing goal, and still successfully complete a project. And also I should say that the definition of success in indie adventure games is usually that you completed your project and released it. But that doesn't mean that a project that you worked on and didn't complete was a waste of time. You may have learned incredibly valuable lessons that you can take with you onto other projects or just, into life in doing a project. So I think it's important to remember that a successful project is one where you learn something,
Sure.
And I mean, there's other there's other things, and I think we should start by saying that the time to give up probably depends on your goals at the time and why you're doing the game, you know? Sure.
We talked a little bit about this before when we were talking last night, or my last night, your this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we were kind of brainstorming over what to cover, and we each thought about projects of our own that we've abandoned for different reasons, and I abandoned four that I could remember for different reasons.
I abandoned a lot more. A lot more.
Yeah.
But my approach to making games, especially early on, was, you know, For a little while I tried really big projects, as a lot of people do when you start trying to make a project. And I realized I didn't have the skills to pull those off. So I just went, all right, I'm going to stop making those and I'm going to make something simple and small.
Right.
And abandoning those big unwieldy projects is what actually gave me the motivation, you know, having a small goal. Suddenly I had the motivation and abilities to finish what was in my head at that time, rather than this, you know, Herculean task that was just beyond me.
Hmm.
So I think it's pretty natural when first making games to have like these big dreams of, like, you played, you know, Sam and Max as a kid, so you want to make something that big.
Right.
But then you then realize that was a professional studio of, you know, people that had studied coding and animation and art and music, and that you just don't have the same level of skills to pull off something that big.
Although, to play devil's advocate, by today's standards, the first Sam and Max game, or Sam and Max Hit the Road, is really not that big. It's about...
It's not, but there's a lot of animation to it.
Sure, yeah.
There's a lot of stuff to it. There's, like, extra, you know, mini games.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of stuff, and that all takes a lot of time.
Yeah, size-wise, it's about the size of one of the, you know, an average AGS full-length game. But it has a level of polish that, obviously, the team and artists and everything, I mean, that's it. You can tell that it was a professional thing.
Yeah, it's a matter of quantity over quality.
Right.
As well, quality over quantity, I should say. You know,
yes.
You can have anybody can draw 100 scenes.
Sure.
But can you draw 100 scenes to a certain level?
Right.
You know, anyone can do 200 animations, but can you do those animations to a particular level?
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah. So I'll talk a little bit about the projects that I abandoned, and I'll say why. And then I'll talk about a project I didn't abandon, but I did give up on. So, just to make that distinction. Mm-hmm. So very briefly, the first project I recall abandoning was a Reality on the Norm game that I was making. It was called Kill Phil, and as you can probably guess, it was pretty much a parody of the Kill Bill film that had just come out. Which was volume one. And if you remember Reality on the Norm, the idea was that Phil, who was one of the minor characters, I think he was one of the Yahtzee brand store clerks or something.
Mm-hmm.
He was like a crime boss, and he killed Elandra, or left her for dead.
Oh my goodness.
Along with, yeah, Elandra was the protagonist. And him and four other members of the Reality on the Norm, basically it was the plot of Kill Bill, but switched out with Reality on the Norm characters.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, like, it starts off in the church basement because instead of a church, it's a church basement. And then Elandra wakes up in the hospital, and, like, the hospital guards are being nasty to her. And then, so she escapes from her bed. And then, like, the first puzzle is you have to, like, take out your IV needle and stab the guard. And, of course, I had these delightfully gory close-ups of her, like, stabbing the guard with the needle and blood spraying out everywhere and the music from Kill Bill playing. And it was very silly, and I got as far as, I think I got about halfway through, because I remember you have to escape the hospital. She gets her clothes, which inexplicably is the Bruce Lee Uma Thurman yellow jumpsuit with the
yellow
black
jumpsuit,
stripe.
Right.
Yeah, with the black stripe. So the first person on her list is Thakbor's mom, who was the equivalent of the first person that Uma Thurman kills in Kill Bill. So she like goes to the nice domestic house, and it's Thakbor's mom, and they have a little banter, and then she kills her with a knife, and then Thakbor comes home, and he's like, "Mommy, mommy, what happened?" And so that was as far as I got, and I think I abandoned it because even though I really liked what I had done, I just kind of lost interest after a while, because I was like, yeah, this is funny, but like, there's only so far that this joke is gonna go, and I don't know, I can't remember because it was over 10 years ago, but yeah, I just was like, okay, I'm done with this, and then I never finished it. And by the time that I decided this, like, so much time had passed since the actual film had come out that it no longer seemed relevant, so I stopped doing it. And I'm kind of sad that I lost the source code, because it really did, like, maybe I'm romanticizing it in my head and remembering it as better than it was, but I really thought that it was funny as far as, like, the effort that I put into the stupid cutscenes was probably the best part of that game. So,
I mean, yeah, you probably, it's one of those things that requires, I mean, I don't remember Reality on the Norm super well, and I never saw Kill Bill, so it's impossible for me to appreciate if your idea was good or bad.
Yeah. Didn't you tell me you had seen Kill Bill?
I was in a hotel room once chatting with my friend when it was playing in the background.
That was
but
it.
When you talk, I wasn't even looking at the screen. It was just on.
Right, okay.
So that doesn't count as having seen a film.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, you were saying?
Oh, no, you were going to tell us about the rest of your abandoned projects.
Okay. So after that...
And why you stopped making them, more importantly.
So after that, I started making this project that was very, very much based in the ideas of the attitudes of the forum at the time, which was, hey, let's make an adventure game. Haha, let's make it meta humor and blah, blah, blah. So I decided I was going to make a game about a guy who was looking for the AGS source code because Chris Jones had lost it. Ho, 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 how funny. And then he was going to go on a worldwide quest to find the source code and visit all the AGSers because, you know, there was AGSers from all over the world at that point.
And there still is.
And there still are. But I mean, there was an active IRC channel, and that's basically what this game was going to be, like going to visit all the people that were active in the IRC channel.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Nameless mod for Deus Ex, where they basically made their forum into a city.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so...
Which was very funny and good.
Yeah, so the game started off in London, where you were supposed to visit Chris Jones and Esib, who nobody knew what he looked like at the time. So I drew him as like a mysterious man in a trench coat with a black face and just like glowing eyes coming out of the trench coat.
Oh dear.
He was
like Loom kind of.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So he gave you, I forget what, and then you could go in, you were going to go inside, but I only ever did the very first screen, and I did a full walk cycle for the main character, who was this little redheaded guy with a red shirt and blue jeans.
And Jordan.
Yeah, funny you say that, because that then evolved into, I gave up on that project because I thought it was, I guess I probably thought it was stupid, because it was.
It probably was.
Yeah, and I was like, I really
don't. Not that there's anything wrong with making something that's stupid.
No, there isn't, but I lost my passion for it. I just didn't really think that it was a worthwhile effort.
And I think sometimes, like, there's a pattern that's repeating here, is sometimes when you're, you know, 19, something seems really funny.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And then when you're 20, it's really not that funny anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, yeah, so I stopped working on that. I had a whole design document that I had, like, not a whole one, but I had a design document that I had written along with Barry and Williams, also known as AGA, who was... At the time, he was very young and eager and wanted to help me with puzzles a lot. He actually gave me some suggestions for the puzzles in the first two Ben Jordan games, so if you hate the puzzles in those games, you know who to blame. Anyway, so I did take the idea of the world-traveling redhead from that, and I incorporated it into Ben Jordan, so at least it I was able to salvage.
Incorporated it? It literally is the entirety of Ben Jordan.
Well, I took it and I salvaged it and I turned it into something new, is what I meant to say.
And I think just before you go on to your next project, I think that's an important point to mention, is that ideas aren't just concrete things that sit and are only useful in one context. You can salvage stuff and incorporate them later on.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, just those ideas are still as valid as they were. It's like, you know, I don't know how accurate it is, but there was the peyote-induced hallucination scene in Full Throttle originally.
Sure.
You know, we never got that, but we got Psychonauts.
Right.
And I'm glad we got Psychonauts.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, so, yeah, just because you abandon or give up on a project doesn't mean that everything, all the work you've done has been for nothing. There's still things that can come out of it. So yeah, as another good example of an idea that seemed really funny at the time, and then I realized there was only so far I could go with it, was a game I was going to make called Granny Zombie Killer. And Granny Zombie Killer came about as a result of talking in the IRC channel and coming up with the idea. And I just thought, wouldn't it be really funny if you had this sweet old lady, this sweet plump old lady in a bathrobe and glasses, nice granny, walking around the English countryside with a chainsaw, killing zombies. And so that's where Granny Zombie Killer came from. So then I sat down and I wrote this whole story, and there was going to be, you know, she went around the village and she had to find her kidnapped grandson, and it turned out that the person that had kidnapped, or the undead person that had kidnapped her grandson, was actually her zombified dead husband. So there was going to be a sad emotional thing at the end where she has to kill her own undead husband, which is pretty terrible if you think about it.
I think it's funny, but I find death hilarious.
Well, yeah. So I got as far as doing a demo for that game, which was a standalone thing. And I also
remember playing it.
Yeah, I also made a Mags game called Mittens Murder Mystery starring Granny Zombie Killer, because I had done her walk cycles, so I had the character file. Now, the reason I gave up on that project was because I was trying to be very ambitious, and I was trying to make it a quote-unquote high-resolution 640 by 400 game in a hand-drawn, scanned line art style.
Mm.
And that was a lot of work. And I didn't have the experience. I still don't think I have really the experience to pull it off. But,
well, I mean, you haven't done line art characters.
No, I haven't for a very long
time. So you obviously don't have the experience.
Right.
You know,
right,
it's one of those things that you got to have a lot of practice to do, I imagine.
Yeah.
I also have no experience.
Right. So, yeah. So I very quickly realized that it was going to be a lot of work. A lot of work.
Mm.
And so I sort of let my ambition get the better of me, and I decided in the end to not do it. I never actually did any backgrounds for it. I did the backgrounds for the demo, which I was intending to use, but I never used them. And I only got as far as like doing a full walk cycle for Granny. The good thing that came out of that was I bought the animator's survival kit. And the book. And,
big book.
Yes. And I read it, and that helped me animate Granny a little bit better than I would have done normally. So at least I got a semi-decent walk cycle out of it. But that book has helped me out many times throughout the years. And so at least it came out, that came out of it. And similarly, there was another project which was also the same style. But I actually got a lot farther on that project. So I'm not really the most proud to admit this, but I did these games when I was first learning AGS, or about the same time I was doing Reality on the Norm, but I never released them to the public until years later, and I still to this day kind of regret the fact that I did that, because they were really dumb. But I basically took Monkey Island and I swapped out the characters for people that I went to middle and high school with, and I set myself as the protagonist, and I called them Carver Island because I went to Carver Middle School, and it was really dumb, and it was full of in-jokes that only I understood, and nobody else would have understood them, and for some reason I released them to the public anyway. So I made the first two games pretty quickly. And then I was working on the third one, which was this whole big production, which had animated cutscenes and flash and voice acting and all hand-drawn backgrounds and animations. And I still have my folder, and it's like pages and pages and pages of all these drawings and stuff. And I scanned them all, and I did all this painstaking work. And I finished the game, basically. I mean, the game, I think I cast all the characters. It had full voice acting. And you could play the game all the way up until the very, very end, and there was no final puzzle. And I never finished it, because I just decided that I didn't want to finish it. Because who was gonna enjoy it besides me? And
right.
It's kind of a shame, because I did put a lot of effort into it, but the fact that it was just a Monkey Island ripoff, like, it ended up becoming its own thing, obviously. The first one was pretty similar to the first Monkey Island, but then after that, I kind of went out and branched off my own story and stuff. But, like, mm-hmm. you know, it had all the music was ripped from, you know, Grim Fandango and Curse of Monkey Island and other LucasArts games and stuff like that. So, it wasn't by any means original as far as that. Like, I couldn't have done anything but release it as freeware. And it was a huge, huge game. And at the time, you know, the internet wasn't like what it is now. It would have been a pain in the ass to upload and download for anybody, because it was, it was about, you know, it could fit on a CD. It was over 300 or 400 megabytes. Like, now we don't think that's anything, but back then it was.
No.
It was huge.
That's a lot, yeah.
So yeah, I gave up on it. I never released it. But, again, it served as really good practice, not just for drawing, but it also served as good practice for game design and puzzle design, because there were some pretty good puzzles in there, I thought. And
also, I think in doing a project like that, you learn that it takes more than your high school or middle school jokes to make something that you're satisfied with.
Oh, sure.
You start looking beyond and go, well, what story do I actually want to tell?
Sure.
Because we all start with, well, I don't know, but I also started just making dumb jokes for my friends to laugh about.
Sure.
Which was all I wanted to do, was just make my friends laugh at that point.
Right. Yeah, and
that was enough.
And I lifted some puzzles from that game for other games. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, I picked that corpse as it were.
Yeah. And as you say, you got the experience.
Sure.
Which is its own reward.
Yeah, and it gave me a good idea of scope and what I could and couldn't do and how long it would take me to finish and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those were the projects that I completely abandoned. The one project that I gave up on but still released was Ben Jordan Case 5.
Yeah, we were talking about this last night, because I remember you've mentioned that you weren't really satisfied with that.
Yeah, when I started off making Ben Jordan 5, I had just played Gabriel Knight's Sins of the Fathers, as is apparent by playing that game. And I wanted to do something that felt similar. I wanted to have the day structure. I wanted to have the police procedural elements. I wanted to have that sort of drama, I guess. And as I made it, I kept just realizing that what I was making wasn't a Ben Jordan game. It was a Gabriel Knight game trying to be a Ben Jordan game, and it just didn't have that same personal spark. And so I just got really frustrated with the project, and I gave up on it. I just was, in the sense that I just wasn't as passionate about it. I finished it because I wanted to finish it so that I could make the other games that I really was excited about.
And 6 is where the series really grabbed me, you know.
Okay.
Beyond that point is where I was like, oh, this is great. You know?
Right. Yeah. So because at that point, I already knew where the series was going, and I had an idea of what the three remaining games were going to be, and I was really excited about each of them. So yeah, I finished 5 because I knew that if I didn't finish 5, I would never get to make the other ones, and I really wanted to make the other ones. And I mean, there's a few things in 5 that I put in that I thought that were like me things, like the stupid Japanese game show thing. That's totally my sense of humor and silly. And it sticks out like a sore thumb.
Easter egg ending.
Well, yeah, that, yeah, of course. But the whole thing of just, I don't know, the whole, like, Ben Jordan using a fingerprint kit and all that stuff is, like, it seemed fine, but it just, I don't know, it just didn't seem like that was what the series was about. And it just, yeah, it got boring,
I thought. I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand.
So, yeah.
And I think that it's, you know, when you're especially learning, you're going to make missteps when you're trying stuff. That's the whole point of trying stuff, to see if it works or not. And there was a thing that the person who taught me to water ski said to me one day. He said, if you're not falling, like once you've learned to ski and you're starting to push yourself, if you're not falling, you're not pushing yourself hard enough. Right. You know, if you stay up the whole time, you're not trying to, you know, go beyond your boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's advice that you can carry on into other things. You know, if you fail, because we get very scared of failing. You know, we value success. But sometimes, I think I even said this last time, you can learn as much or more from your failures than you can from your successes.
Right.
You know, even if it's just what not to do.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us about your abandoned projects?
Oh, man, I've abandoned as many projects at least as I've finished. Because I work very short scale, you know, yeah. And I would start a project not with a project in mind. I'd just start making a thing and just see what happens. You know, I'd start throwing ideas into images, into code, and see just what came out. And sometimes what came out, I was like, oh, this is worth taking to some sort of finished state, or this is not, you know. So sometimes you think something will work really well, and then you build it into a game and it simply doesn't work. And that was the case for a lot of my, you know, mechanics. You know, some of my mechanics were very simple, like design a game with no inventory items. That was a very simple thing to approach. You're like, yeah, I can design puzzles around that. Whereas other games were like, well, let's have ideas as an inventory item, or let's have, you know, let's have a cursor that's actually a device flying around and you have to rename hotspot names in order to solve puzzles and stuff like that. And that a lot of those ideas were very, very far beyond my ability at the time, and probably still even now. And also something that sometimes seems like a really good idea doesn't lend itself that well to actually creating good and satisfying puzzles. It might be clever once or twice, but that doesn't mean that you can get a whole game's worth of puzzles out of it, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of the times I had what I thought were very innovative ideas, and, you know, I'd tried building stuff out of them, and I thought, well, I like the idea and I think it's a bit clever and maybe a bit subversive, but I can't actually build anything out of this. I can't. Where's the game in it, you know? It's just, well, you know.
Sure.
So a lot of the times I'd stop working on projects when I realized that, well, the idea was kind of clever, but I've got no game here. It's like, oh, I subverted something. Hooray. You know, and subverting something's worthwhile, but you have to have more than just subversion, I think. Well, you don't have to, but I personally wanted more than that. So, you know, but the fact that I was working quickly, you know, I would start a project and then 2 weeks later, I'm like, this isn't working. So I'd stop and I'd try something else. And for me, in that case, the point to give up is when I had tried something and tested those waters, and if those, you know, ideas didn't work the way I thought they had, I'd stop.
Right.
It was nothing like, you know, and I guess if you had, you know, the time or the motivation or the discipline to take stuff to its conclusion more than I had there, that you could probably turn those ideas into something more. But because I was just learning and I was feeling my way through, I was like, well, I'm not losing anything by giving up on this idea. Ideas aren't that precious. It's what you do with them. You know, we always say execution is more important than concept. And this was very much the case for me a lot of the times, you know. And there's so many projects that I just, yeah, this didn't work.
Hmm.
I also think an important time to stop working on stuff is when your life situation changes.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly for me, when Dave hired me full time, there's a lot of not a lot, but there's a few projects there that I'm like, well, I'm not making this anymore. I just, you know, my efforts go towards, you know, actually doing this for a living.
Right.
And the other projects that I was working at the time were not pushing towards doing the games for a living, which is what my goal was. So the games that I had been working on suddenly no longer aligned with what my goals were, which was to try and, you know, not have to do farm work for a living anymore. So I think, like, it's less of a philosophical, like, you know, learn from things and everything like that. It was just that you've only got so much time to work on stuff. You got to work on the stuff that really matches your goals at the time, which is pretty simple.
What would you say is the project that you worked on, the project that you abandoned that you worked on the longest?
Well, I didn't really abandon that one, but it was Winter's Shadow. You know, we'd worked on that one a fair bit, and I thought it could be good. You know, I look back at it now, I was like, oh, this is stupid. You know, it didn't look any good and everything like that. But at that time, I really believed it could be good. And I think I had 27 rooms painted of varying quality. And it just got to the point where, you know, we knew, both of us, that sort of it didn't work as a game.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's a lot of the times people have ideas that they think this will make a really great game, but there was no meat behind it. It was all sort of...
Sure.
It was all style, no substance. And it wasn't even that much style, but I thought it was stylish at the time. But yeah, so that was a pretty big project to stop working on, and I took that pretty hard, actually, because, you know, that was the biggest thing I'd worked on. Not the biggest thing I'd worked on. I guess I was making a game with Sebastian called Primary Unit, which was...
Or PU for short.
PU, which was... And that's actually what we called him in the game, obviously.
Of course.
But there was... that was 2008, and I had this idea of, like, you know, making an adventure game that's like a... You've go to four different worlds, and like a Sonic game or a Mario game, there's different... Each world has its different themes. And I think it was 8 rooms per world, and there were 4 rooms, so, you know, it would have... I don't know how many rooms I actually drew, but it was 20-something rooms.
Right.
And I designed the first half, and then Sebastian was going to design the second half. And my design was pretty simple, pretty basic, and pretty, you know, straightforward. And then Sebastian had some incredibly esoteric and difficult-to-accomplish ideas, and it just... Him, the act of him trying to take his ideas into an actual finished game. I mean, he had Monkey Island style sword fighting that was actually religious debating.
Oh my god!
That was entirely optional.
Interesting.
And it was just it was so much. He had so much ambition, and no idea how to code it. And it was just it was a, you know, it was. I mean, it was a lot for him, and, you know, it was actually working on that project that was, you know, that was a very big project, and us, and I could see that it just wasn't working. That drove me to start making short games,
right?
As an escape from that. I'm like, this just isn't working. All these big ideas I have just keep failing. I can't do it.
Right.
I got to make smaller stuff, you know. So I made Any Android as a break from that game. And just kept making short games after that for a long time. You know, that was the game that burned me the hardest, I guess.
Right. Well, not because... I mean, you did take the idea of traveling to different worlds and put that into Shifter's Box.
I did, and Shifter's Box was originally designed as, you know, an even shorter thing, because Shifter's Box is very short, but it was designed to be even shorter. Which
right.
is incredible to me, because it would have been like 2 minutes long. But, you know, but yeah. I mean, I love the idea of traveling to different worlds. It's one of my favorite things to do in adventure games. So I actually just recently released an article about going to other dimensions.
Yes, you did.
On adventuregamers.com.
Plug, plug, plug.
So go and check that out. delicious. Glug, glug, glug. But yeah, a lot of the times when I abandoned a project is when I had an idea that I thought there was something behind it, and so I tried the idea And if the idea proved worth, you know, making something out of, I'd make a short game out of it. If not, I'd move on.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes I still thought there were merit behind the things that I abandoned, but every project I stopped working on, I stopped working for a reason. You know, I didn't stop making games. I stopped making particular games.
Sure.
You know, so there was always a very specific reason why.
Mm-hmm. So, we've talked about individual reasons for giving up or giving up on individual projects, but why don't you tell us a little bit about team projects? Because I haven't had this experience, because really my only major team project has been Shardlight, and obviously that
right.
was released.
We completed it.
We did. Yeah. And I don't feel like I gave up on it at any point, really. So, yeah, but you were working on a team project.
Working on a number of team projects that we didn't complete.
Okay, well, why don't you tell us a little bit about those?
When I first started working with Dave, there were a couple of projects that he had in mind that he just had ideas for. And me being fairly energetic and enthusiastic, he was fairly. Working on other stuff at the time. But I was like, oh, give me something to work on. You know, I'd love to work with you. Let's do something. So he would just give me these rough ideas and I'd, you know, sort of make art for them and we'd see if there was anything behind them. And it was entirely Dave's, you know, prerogative, I would say, to stop working on those because they didn't work for him as a designer. But, you know, for me as an artist, you know, I had no sort of regrets about, you know, those projects being abandoned or anything like that, but they sort of established a working relationship with Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I sort of was like, oh, I like working with this guy. I like his ideas, you know, so that was, we started working on, there were two projects. One was a science fiction one and one was a sort of fantasy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we stopped working on those games, it would kind of like, you know, well, we work well together and, you know, I can, sort of, it was also the first time that I had tried making games for someone else's art style in a serious way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I can do this. It was hard. You know, the first time I had to make graphics for someone else was very, very difficult. But, yeah, so we stopped working on those projects, and I don't know that they'll ever turn into anything, but it was, again, the fact that we thought there was an idea there and it wasn't satisfying enough to designer to be like, okay, well, this is worth turning into a full game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's better. I want to say, and this is something that I thought tonight when I was just going over ideas in my head, the best time to give up on a project is early.
Yes.
And that sounds stupid, but it's really true. If you realize that it's not working early on, you can try and save it, yes, but sometimes you just know that it's just not going to work. And if you can get rid of it early and move on to something else, then you put that effort into something that you do believe in. You got to believe in something to make it. I really think that.
Oh, and yeah.
Sometimes you know this just isn't working, you know. So if you can catch that early before you go, well, let's finish this because we put a lot of time into it or we put money into it or we've put, you know, if that's your reason for finishing a project, you can expect your players to feel the same way.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we got a game, but it's not what we wanted.
Right. That's what happened with Ben Jordan 5.
Right. So, yeah. Obviously, I worked on a bunch of stuff with Steve Poulton, and that some of those projects got finished. A lot of them did not. But again, a lot of those were us throwing ideas at the wall
right.
and just seeing what worked. And a lot of the times, the ideas were style, not substance, and I was, you know, I was willing to try anything at that point, and so was he. So it was just two young guys experimenting, just seeing what would work and what wouldn't, and a lot of the time, a lot of it didn't work. No, it wasn't sexual in nature much, but, you know, but that's just part of experimenting. You know, if you expect to finish every damn drawing that you start, you mustn't try any, you mustn't draw anything interesting ever, because you know, if you start challenging yourself, you're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. That's part of the process.
Mm.
I really think that, you know, So, you know, that was the thing. We were trying different stuff. We were seeing what worked. We both learned a lot, I think. And, you know, there were times when I was bitter about not finishing projects. I think that's also natural. But that's just how it goes. And then I worked with, I want to say worked with, but I dabbled with the guys from Wormwood Studios. You're very juvenile tonight.
Tonight.
Well, fair. But yeah, they had sort of contacted me. We worked on a jam game together, a very short thing. And even that I only dabbled with because I didn't get sort of character descriptions until the last sort of 10 hours. So I had 10 hours to draw and animate characters, which was fine. You know, I wasn't upset about it or anything like that, but that was something that led us to go, hey, we should try doing something else, because Vic liked drawing the characters but didn't like animating them much. So, you know, I was like, well, I like animating, so we can join forces. So they talked to me and we had big ideas and we got started on some stuff. And it became pretty clear early on that we have different approaches and different workflows. I'm a very practical guy. I was raised working class, so my sort of thing was always get the job done. You know, it's a job, you get it done, then you're done, then you move on to the next job. Whereas Vic is very much an artistic type, and so is Mark, and they discussed things for weeks and months. And 3 months into this game project, I still hadn't got to really draw a character, which was fine. You know, it wasn't like they were overworking me. If anything, I was being underworked, and I was thinking, am I ever going to get to actually work on this game? You know, and they had a concept guy that was doing all these sketches for the main character. You know, so by the time it came to me actually drawing the main character, I was really just converting someone else's artwork into pixels.
Right.
Which, you know, but it just got to the point, you know, and then sort of 3 months in, I think, to that, Dave, or it might not have been that long, Dave hired me full time. And I was like, all right, guys, look, I got to tell you that I'm working for Dave full time, you know, and we'll see about what happens. But the project didn't happen, and I think it was a bunch of different stuff. But for me personally, I was like, their style of working is very different to my style of working.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I really admired them for how much thought and development they gave a single character sprite, because that's nothing like what I'd ever done, you know. And it kind of overwhelmed me to the point that you could put that much thought into a single sprite. Because, you know, a sprite, that's for me, you do that and then you make a cup of tea and then you get back to work, you know. So that really sort of pushed me to think, well, maybe I could do more, you know, and I still don't do enough. Character design takes me long enough as it is, honestly. Mm. But yeah, that was fascinating. And then I had another project with Dan Alexander, who was making the Zage engine, and we were working on a project called Ortus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was, we talked about working together for a while. I originally made Shifter's Box with the idea of making it in Zage engine, but then he didn't sort of release it yet, so I released that in AGS, and then I made Awakener pretty much just as a test port thing. People wondered why Awakener was so short. It's because it was literally made just to test Zage. You know, I made it pretty quick just to see if Zage could handle.
For those who might not know or remember, what is Zage?
Zage was XNA Adventure Game Engine. So it was built to run on multiple platforms. It was, you know, sort of Xbox 360 and Windows Phone and that sort of stuff.
Hmm.
As well as in browser.
Okay.
So I was excited by a new engine, and, you know, the guy seemed to know his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so then he moved to a different country. I believe he moved from the UK to the US, but I could be misremembering that. And then, you know, I started working on Blackwell Epiphany. So both of our free times were diminished to a great extent.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things where I could have done more on the project, but my goals at that point were to work on Blackwell Epiphany.
Right.
And they didn't quite match up with my goals. So it's one of those times where you got to assess your priorities if you've got too many projects on at once, which at that point I did, because originally we were going to have the same team for Epiphany as Deception, so I wasn't going to be doing the background arts. But then Indrek pulled out, so Dave asked me if I'd do the background as well. Did I say background arts?
You did. That's very
funny.
I didn't want to call you out on it, but you did say that. It was amusing.
I just my brain caught up with my mouth and I went, hang on, that's not how that word works. But yeah, so then, I mean, I was excited about doing background art for Dave, background arts for Dave.
Yes.
So, you know, I was glad to take that on, but it meant I had to sort of go, all right, what are my priorities here? Mm-hmm. I can't do all of this at once. Right. You know? So again, a lot of people have the issue of taking on too many projects, and sometimes you got to go, all right, what's number one?
Right. Well,
so I guess that really sums up the most interesting projects that I abandoned. You know, I abandoned a lot more, but nothing that's worth going into any detail on.
Fair enough.
And I guess in recapping, the reason is because I was learning, and you don't turn every sketch into a painting.
Right, of course. Of course.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't regret abandoning any of the ones I, you know, most of the times I look at the games I finished now and I'm like, oh, why did I release that? You know?
Well.
Like, I don't.
Excuse me. Yeah, I burped when I was going to talk.
We all make that mistake sometimes.
We do. We do. So I guess to kind of sum up Snarky's question of when do you know it's time to walk away from a project, I guess it really just depends on your own personal feeling
about the thing. Yeah, there's a lot of different factors.
But I would say if your heart's not in it anymore, that's a pretty big deciding factor. For what, you know, and that can be caused by several things. But
I also want to say that especially counts if you're just doing it for fun.
Yeah. Cause,
like, if you're doing it for work and you're just about finished and you put all this time into it, you got to eat.
You know? Right, sure. But if you're just doing it for fun, there's so many other things that you could focus on that you enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. You know, just because you start a project for fun, if halfway through it stops being fun, then just stop. Because
reassess, like, or, why did I want to make this again?
Exactly. Because there's really no point in not having fun if you're doing something as a hobby. No one does a hobby because, you do a hobby because you want to have fun. You know, if I go skydiving, it's because I want to go skydiving. It's not because I'm like, oh, I'm terrified of heights.
Skydiving counted as a hobby.
Well, some people go skydiving as a hobby.
I guess.
They do it for fun.
Hobbies is like making model railroads and things like that.
Well, sure, but I mean hobbies in the sense of something you do for fun.
I also want to say, I don't know if this is relevant at all, but if your goal and your project is to turn making adventure games from a sort of hobby into a job, and that's why you're doing it, and you're thinking of giving up.
A hobby into a jobby?
Yeah, and you're thinking of giving up because it's very hard. It is super hard to turn a hobby into a job.
Yes.
And I admire, I like a lot of like sort of crafty sort of people. And one of the things I watch regularly is YouTube channels that are basically guides on how to make miniature scenery for like tabletop gaming or railroads or that sort of thing. I really like them. And I've seen incredibly talented people doing that, try and turn it into a job and just watch the misery of their lives as I realize that it is super hard to turn a hobby into the job. And it makes me feel terrible to buy. I'm like, oh, games are the same. This doing these things, if that's like, if you're thinking of giving up because it's really hard, or before you start, you should know at one point you'll probably think of giving up because it's really hard. Well, probably more than one point, but you know, that's just, yeah, that's something to be aware of.
Sure.
You know, and it's, I mean, I weathered the rough patches myself, but I know that there's probably more coming, you know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm going through one right now. I can talk about that a little bit. Like, I'm looking for a publisher right now, and I've reached out to many, many, many publishers, and I've heard back from maybe 10% of the ones that I've reached out to. And of the ones I've heard back from, one I thought was going to go somewhere, but ended up not at the very last minute. And the others, I'm still waiting to hear from some. One I've heard back from, but yeah. And so, yeah, it's like, it can be pretty tempting. Like, sometimes I thought, is this even worth it? Should I continue pursuing this? Like, should I give up?
Run.
But no, I shouldn't, because I'm making a game. I'm passionate about the game. I want this game released. You know, I'm looking for publishers for my own reasons, which is basically I need funding to finish the game because you need money to make games. And, but there's many options out there. You know, when the deal with this one that I thought was going to happen fell through, I was pretty bummed for a while because I thought they were my last hope. But when I did a little bit more research and digging, I realized that there actually was a lot more option, were a lot more options out there. And so I've pursued those options. And they haven't, you know, I still don't know what's going to happen, but there's always something. And I'm optimistic.
If the first stumbling block is enough to make you stop, then,
sure,
you know, then you didn't realize how rocky the path is.
Exactly.
It's that simple.
And the whole point is that for every, you see all of these indie game people and all their successes, and you only hear about the successes. You don't hear about the failures. But I would say that the failures usually outnumber the successes. You have to fail a lot to be able to succeed.
I think Jonathan Blow went broke twice before he finished Braid.
Yeah.
On other projects.
Right.
You know, you see a lot of failure, and it's easy to think, you know, or you just become Notch because you made an indie game and, well, you're famous, but you never hear about the smaller games that never went anywhere, the you know, $100,000 loans that just went into nothing.
Not to get political or anything, but I don't think Notch is the kind of person that anyone should aspire to be anymore, to be honest.
No, but I mean in terms of financial success.
Sure. Well, yeah, I guess. Although he is famously quoted as saying that he has all this money, but he's miserable because he's lonely.
Yeah,
because people only want to hang out with him.
But as a measure of financial success,
sure,
he's worth saying he's an indie game developer that got rich.
Yeah, although he's the very much the exception to the rule.
Right, but that's the thing, is that how many projects did Notch have before he was successful? And how many years of working on that one project to make it successful, you know?
Yeah.
Same with Jonathan Blow, same with probably anybody that's been successful.
Phil Fish.
As you see,
everybody, there was that video a while back about Phil Fish, that Fez, everyone was, you know, Fez was what put him on the map, but he had made I don't know how many projects before that that hadn't gotten any attention. Same with Angry Birds, the guys that made Angry Birds. Angry Birds wasn't their first game. They had made I don't know how many other games that didn't do well before that. So,
yeah. You see the successes and they are what inspire you, but what should also inspire you is people persevering past failures.
Exactly.
Because that's part of the process, and it's a very big part of the process, you know.
Sure.
And there's points where I wanted to give up, you know, especially trying to turn this into a job. There were days when I was just like, I should just get a job, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like a full-time, I should pursue a career, I should say, because I had a job. I always had a job, but I was like, I should pursue a proper career. You know, this just isn't going to work. I'm not good enough, you know, and I think that's just how it is.
Right.
You know, I mean, I know Dave has days where he feels the same thing.
Sure.
You know? And it's easy to go, but Dave's made all these games and he's done all this stuff and everyone knows who he is, you know? That doesn't mean you don't have the days where you're like, this just didn't work. And
of course
that's
not.
It's just part of it.
And just because you make games doesn't mean that every single game is going to be as well received as the other ones. You know?
And just because you're doing a thing that you liked doing 10 years ago doesn't mean that you're going to be happy doing it forever.
Yeah, exactly.
I used to wonder about people that were very successful in their field and then totally changed their fields.
Yeah.
But after you've done a job that you love for 10 years, or if you've made games for 10 years, there'd be days where there's days now that I'm just happy to go outside and spend the day outside.
Sure.
You know, it's funny because I used to work on farms as my sort of day job. and then
now it's your
work
hobby.
On games to unwind, and now I work on, you know, my dad's farm to unwind while working, you know, a 40-hour week making games. Well, I say 40-hour, but it's, you know, you always...
Sure.
It's always a little more, but, you know, it's like... A change is as good as a rest, they say.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But, yeah, I guess that's the thing, is sometimes when you feel like walking away, you got to know that that's just part of the process, is that it's going to be overwhelming, and you're going to think, oh, this is never going to work.
Sure.
And it's okay to have those thoughts, and it's okay to stop doing something if it's just ruining your life, I guess.
Yeah. You know? And I mean, like, to put another analysis on this, like, there's two sides to this other thing, too, is say you're an indie developer, and you make it big, and you make a really popular game. There's something to be said for admiring people who don't just say, oh, well, I made a multi-million dollar game. I'm not going to make games anymore. I don't need to make games anymore. I'm rich. You know, people who are still passionate about making games and still do projects after that, that's pretty admirable. But it's completely understandable, too, if when you make a game and then you make another game after that, and people, as they tend to do, measure the new game against the success of the first game, and if it's not what they were expecting, then it's, you know, it's possible to get backlash. And if you were to give up after that and say, oh, well, I'm never going to make this game again, I could understand how that might be tempting to give up. But I mean, I can think of a perfect example from very recent memory is Tacoma. Tacoma, mm-hmm. made by the guys who made Gone Home. Gone Home was a big success, and Tacoma is not doing well. Tacoma is basically, right. I think it got good reviews, but nobody's really playing it. Nobody's really buying it. And I don't know if that's because it wasn't marketed well or what, but I think it just suffers from what happens a lot of the times where people are like, oh, the guys who made Gone Home are making another game. Wait, this isn't like Gone Home. And then...
Well, I mean, the reason I haven't played Tacoma yet is because I imagine it's fairly similar to Gone Home. And I'm like, well, okay, I'll play it, but at some point, you know.
Right.
So, there's... Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's interesting. But I think if you are very optimistic with your expectations of receptions and sales, then, you know, it's more likely that you'll get burnt, obviously.
Right.
You know, the more we do stuff, the more that sort of we realize that I got no idea what works or not, what yeah. people like and what they don't like. It's hard to predict.
Oh, yeah.
You got to make something for yourself, not for what the market wants.
Exactly. Although, if you intend to make it your career, you have to have some idea of what the market wants.
No, you don't. They don't want low-res point-and-click adventure games, but we're still making them.
Yeah, well, they don't want low-res point-and-click adventure games about real estate agents in the 20s.
Oh, you.
Well, all things considered, there was a market. It's not like nobody bought it. People bought that game.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the thing, is that people are also open to new ideas to some extent. I know I am. Yeah, I love seeing a game do something new.
Sure. So, yeah. Anyway.
Mm. We sort of got off topic a bit, but we do appreciate the topic suggestion, and yes. It was a lot of food for thought.
Yeah. And if...
So, thank you.
Thanks. We always appreciate the topic suggestions, because it means we don't have to come up with any on our own. So, if you have any, please post them on the forums or... tweet them at us. Speaking of which, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Grunislav Games.
I'm at Ben_304. And
together we are at BCT_podcast. So yes, very good. Thanks for listening. This has been episode 112.
Mm.
We have obviously not given up on this podcast.
We have given up on updating the thread back in episode 82.
Well, but, you gave up on updating the thread because I don't have access to it.
That's true. which you mean you don't have access to my forum account.
Well, yes, I don't.
Which means you can't see.
Thank goodness, because I think I'd probably... I don't know what would happen if I had access to your forum account. I'd probably die from all of the PMs from...
you can't handle the things Ponch has said to me in private. That's all I'm saying.
No, I can't.
Your eyes can't handle what he's shown me.
No, I can't. My eyes could hardly handle the image of the angry cow with milk coming out of its udders.
Yeah. I love that cow.
Anyway, yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.